Geico presents sharing versus oversharing. Today, Bridget Griffin shared a video of her daily yoga routine, two self-help articles, and her new blog called Build Your Inner Bridge with Bridge. Girl, your sharing has turned into oversharing. No worries, Bridge. Geico has some info worth sharing with your 7 blog followers, like how you could save money on your car insurance, update your policy, and report a claim just by visiting geico.com. How's that for building your inner bridge? Bridge, Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to The Authentic Woman. This is your host, Shannon Fisher. I'm excited to have you here tonight. We've got a very special guest that is out of the box. It's definitely a different topic and a different realm than we normally talk about on this show. I try to really mix it up and cover just about every aspect of the female experience and of the human experience, including spirituality. And so tonight, I have got world-renowned psychic Lori Kazan, and she was named one of the world's top psychics by the Edgar Cayce Institute for Intuitive Studies, which is a very prestigious institute, and she's been working for years and years as a psychic, and many people call her their secret weapon. So, Lori, welcome.
Well, thank you. I'm happy to be here.
I'm excited to have you here. We'll start off talking about a book that you just published, well, within the last year, called Happiness Calls Your Name, Channeled One-Minute Meditations to Rewire Your Brain. So
right.
Tell me a little bit about what brought you to write this book.
Well, what brought me to write it, it's sort of a channeled book. That is, it kind of comes through me. I do a free newsletter for people just to keep what I see when I'm doing readings for just so your callers know, we didn't pre-talk this. We didn't pre-plan what we were going to say. It seemed like something that was necessary. I know that it helps me to use affirmations and to use meditation. People call and they want to know, well, you know, kind of like what's my future, what's going to happen. But your own energy has a lot to say about what's going to, not totally, but it does affect what's going to happen in your life and how you're going to deal with it, and also what you can call into you. And so that's what got me to write the book. I noticed certain patterns in people that I do readings for and patterns in myself and noticing ways that could help it. And just kind of with my writing background and just sort of channeling and seeing what works for people.
I figure also,
if it works for me, because I tend to be hardcore. I'm a Capricorn. I can get very negative and very intense. And so, you know, if it can turn my life around, and I've seen it turn a lot of people around, so that you can start. Sometimes, you know, we can predict what's going to happen to you, and it's not what we want for you. And you can turn some of that around.
That's wonderful. So you're really giving many people an opportunity to address the issues that they feel perhaps they're lacking in that area in their life. And there's an index in the back with topics, which I loved. I loved that. So you could, you know, look in the back and say, well, I want to know something about wisdom. And so you go and meditation
we try
about
to,
wisdom.
I try to make it as easy as possible because I tend to be a little bit lazy. So I like things that are easy to do, or I know I won't do them. So it's a kind of book that you can skip around in. There's all sorts of levels to it. I know sometimes if I'm having a bad day, I'll just look at the bottom where there's a 4 today, and I'll just use that as kind of my mantra for the day. And it makes a difference.
Yes, it really does. And for the listeners out there, they're broken down, and so she'll I actually, do you mind if I read one over the
No, feel free.
Okay, this is this joyous day. Divine love takes my breath away. It radiates through my soul and moves me gently from night to day. Life is good and I am free. Every wonderful opportunity is now open for me. As I say yes to all the best, even better comes my way. I am rich in everything that matters and fully present in this joyous day. And so, listeners, that gives you an idea of the kind of meditations and affirmations that are in here. And then at the bottom of each page, she's got a mantra for the day. And the mantra for this is feel free, breathe it in deeply. So tell me about mantras and tell my listeners how they can apply those to their daily life.
You know, several things with the book. I got together with some artist friends to help me design it. We wanted, again, to have it be so beautiful that it would resonate for you even before you. Thing about beauty that's just healing to the soul. So we wanted it to emanate out good vibes. And mantras and things like that, you know, if you listen to the voice in your head, many of us, if you get quiet for a second, if you don't think you have a voice in your head, get quiet, and you're going to hear that there's somebody talking to you all the time. And a lot of times what's talking is our second grade teacher that didn't like us so well, or you know, our mothers, or, you know, all sorts of old voices. And they're ruling our lives. So this book is kind of in the pattern of a Catherine Ponder or Science of Mind. It's a very old-fashioned kind of way of bringing of retuning your brain. And then in the front, I have a therapist who has written about how it can work on your brain and how our brains actually work. And that we want to make synapses. Excuse me, I don't know why I'm losing my voice this week. Sometimes when I'm doing readings and I lose my voice, it's because something wants to come through. So it would be nice. It would be nice, but it would be very strange, too, when you were saying out of the box.
Right.
I know people have been calling. You mentioned before we started and wanting readings, which we weren't planning to do. So hopefully some voice isn't going to start channeling for them.
Right, exactly. Oh, yes, I forgot to mention at the top of the show, for those who were hoping that we were going to take callers, we're not planning on taking callers during this show. So, but please listen in.
I'll just keep interrupting, sorry. I did, however, pull a card to answer. I pulled two tarot cards right before we started, and I pulled one for this show itself, and I got the Ace of Pentacles, which is a really good card. It's a very positive card. And then I said, well, what's the answer, in case I don't do readings today, which we weren't planning on, what's the answer to those people? And I got the Three of Cups, which is talking about celebration. It's talking about weddings, celebration. I can even be three people in a relationship. So now I'm sure your people who had questions may have even more questions. But back to our topic.
Well, that's great. And I think a lot of people really don't know how to start meditating. They envision someone, you know, sitting in the lotus position on the floor for 30 minutes trying to levitate. And a lot of people don't understand just centering is a good start. So do you have any advice to offer people on different ways that they can meditate?
Yeah, I talk more about it in the book. I list some, but they can also sign up for my free newsletter or just listen here. And, you know, just following your breath, just watching your breath, watching how you're breathing for a moment. Keep it really simple. We're so wound up with what we can and can't do that we can keep ourselves from moving forward. And, you know, Edgar Cayce, who was one of the most documented psychics in history, said, use what's been given and more will be added. So do what's in front of you to do. It can be, sometimes I stop and I'm just at halt for like 5 minutes. I don't meditate, I don't anything. I just sit still for 5 minutes. It's simple, but it's not always easy. And I find when I do that, all the things I actually really need to do that are my true, from in my innermost self want to do, those things start to surface as opposed to where's my to-do list, what am I supposed to do next? Just even 5 minutes of being quiet, looking at a flower, being in nature. Nature is extremely healing. There's all sorts of levels of meditation. Some people feel that guided meditation isn't as good as silent meditation, but there's brain studies that show it is as good. So you do what you can to make your life more joyous, I think that's why it's called Happiness Calls Your Name, because it's not about being the perfect person. That's not going to happen for any of us. There is no perfection. But especially as women, we're taught that there is, like, there's a whole system about choosing men that says that we're looking for the perfect we're assuming men have to be the perfect woman, but in a man form. And
right.
So we have these ideas of perfection that we're looking for. And I think what we're really looking for is feeling authentic, feeling at home in our own skin, and having a life that when you, like a flower blooming, that things come to you, that it's not like all closed doors all the time. Sometimes we go through those periods where it is closed doors. And I think those 1 minute meditations, you know, they're just a minute. Any of us can do a minute. And can start to like reprogram the brain and send out those cues to the environment that, hey, I'm open for joyousness. I'm open for
right.
all that good that you have.
Sure. And a lot of them really do offer healing messages. And so like you were saying, we're carrying around other voices. We're carrying around negative experiences that are for whatever reason, impacting our brains. And this really is, I mean, I view it as a healing text, because you can read these and process and decide that you're going to be stronger. It's a very positive book. So tell me.
Go ahead.
Well,
I was going to say, you don't even have to decide that you're going to be stronger. You can just want to be happier, healthier. You know, desire can pull you forward. I mean, the Buddhists say, you know, desire is not the way to go. But, you know, we do have these desires. And the desire to be happier is something to listen to and to find where the pleasure lives for you.
Most definitely. And that gets me to my next question, the role of spirituality in this. Another one of your meditations, I am the light I've been searching for, the angel's breath that opens every door. I am the love I've been hoping for, the endless source that never needs more. I am the light that is love that is like no other. And then the mantra is be the light. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's kind of the core of, you know, pretty much every major religion, the light. I am the light. You are the light. So tell me what originally drew you to spirituality and how you discovered that you had these talents and abilities.
Well, I'd say pain drew me to becoming more overtly and spiritual or deeper connected. Relationships, trying to rule things with my best thinking. Mm-hmm. I always, even as a child, in terms of the psychic, you know, you can be psychic without being spiritual. I think as a psychic, I always felt I felt connection, certainly always felt a connection to nature. And as a very young child, my mother would ask me to answer questions for her that were kind of psychic in nature. And living in a chaotic home where my father was unpredictable, he may have broken down something for me, like on a lot of people who do this work. But the positive side is it makes you very sensitive, so you can predict, in a sense, what's this person going to do before they even think of it. And so it was my own kind of difficult circumstances. How much I had before then, how it would have been, we could suppose, but the reality is this is how it has been. And it's always been an interest of mine. I think in my family, my family of origin, everyone had had, even though they didn't talk about it much, we never talked about things like this. Everyone had had experiences, and it's just as part of life, you know, connection with the dead and all of that kind of thing. But we didn't make a big deal out of it.
Right. And that's, I hear that from a lot of people who are in various aspects of the spiritual field, that it came from pain, that it developed as a coping mechanism, the kind of broken open line of thought,
mm-hmm.
that you're more open to other things once your shell is shattered by unfortunate circumstances. And it ends up being a blessing for so many people.
I think it's also looking at what works, you know. For me, I noticed I started reading, probably during the 1980s, I started reading books like The Game of Life and How to Play It and Catherine Ponder and science of mind stuff, and what's his name, who I'm blanking out on his name, but and noticing that you might not be able to make sense out of it, but I noticed if I practiced it, it worked. And then in the 90s, again, dealing with something else, I noticed that I could not imagine how I was going to create it. And for one thing, I saw that in 1992, I was doing this creative visualization book, and I kept writing, I live at the beach, I live at the ocean, I can see the ocean from my window. And at the end of all these positive affirmations, I wrote, but I don't see how this could ever happen. And when I reread that, I was sitting where I live now, which is at the beach and looking at the beach from my window. So, you know, I figure give yourself as much advantage as you can, even if your left brain analytical side says, oh, come on, you know, how's that going to work? It's like, well, keep doing what you're doing, keep getting what you're getting. So I wanted better. And also being a more right brain creative type, I wanted it, I needed to, and the feminine side, you know, the masculine and the feminine that we all have, male or female, the feminine side is the side to us that magnetizes things to us. And I always could relate to that, being more about, let me draw it to me, as opposed to having to go out and slay dragons and fight for things and like that.
Sure, sure. And that's talking about being a creative person, you hold a Master of Fine Arts in writing. Mm-hmm. So what drew you? So, this writing about being a psychic is the perfect thing for you to do, because they're two really strong, themes that have run through your entire life. Mm-hmm. So how did you come out as a psychic, if for lack of a better word? Because, I mean, that's the kind of thing you have to tell your family, you have to tell your friends, and when mm-hmm. you go to do it professionally, I'm certain that you got perplexed reactions from mm-hmm. a few people. Do you want to talk
yeah.
about that?
Sure. I had had an injury to my wrists, and I couldn't work at a regular job. Didn't know what I was going to do. There were two threads in my life, as you said, writing and the psychic. And the psychic I only talked about to people that I felt had, that I intuitively felt had the interest, or that I knew from, you know, studying or somewhere like that. But I did not talk about it to my family until I actually got a job doing psychic readings. And when I injured my wrist, I was told I was going to have surgery. And I didn't have a good, especially being a writer, I really didn't. This was when carpal tunnel was not even fashionable yet. It was a long time ago. And I didn't know what that was going to mean, to have somebody cutting my wrists, and I didn't have a good feeling about it. So I went, everywhere I went, I would ask people if I saw they had anything. I don't know if it was just everybody, but I would ask people if they knew a good hand surgeon. And they all came up with the same guy, strangely enough, Miles Cohen, Dr. Miles Cohen at Cedars-Sinai. So when I was with the injured wrist and I was on workers' comp and they were sending me to doctors and they said I had to have the surgery, whether I thought I did or I didn't. So I finally just felt broken down, because workers' comp is it's a hard system to be in. I know we hear a lot about people ripping it off. And that was not my experience. My experience was being on the side where they treated me as if I were doing that. But so they sent me to 10 doctors. And then I finally said, okay, I'll get the surgery, but I want to go to Dr. Miles Cohen. So I went to Dr. Miles Cohen, and he said, strangely enough, he said, I think surgery would hurt you, not fix you, but actually hurt you. And because he was the most respected surgeon, the 10 other surgeons that I'd been sent to on workers' comp all reversed their diagnosis. So I was in this limbo. Okay, you're not going to have surgery, but we don't know how you're going to get use of your hands fully again. So I started studying Kabbalistic things. And again, none of this was fashionable then. And I took a course at a place called Clearsight on doing healing. And they use processes I've since learned that are like Berkeley Psychic Institute. So I started practicing, and then I started doing healings at their clinic every Wednesday night, doing it on other people. And I could use my hands, and my hands could heat up to do healings, but if you felt my hands, they were still kind of ice cold, but they sent out a lot of heat. So I just got more involved that way. And as this process went on, just to be able to survive, studying the psychic and learning more is something I've always done, to be able to survive in a world or the competitive writing world.
Excellent. Yeah, I would imagine that it does give you quite the competitive edge in pretty much anything that you do.
I don't know if it's
how often do you apply psychic feeling, psychic visions to yourself, or is it normally for other people? What comes to you?
I wouldn't call it a competitive edge. I would just call it a way of being. And in order to, like, the way I see it is, how often do I apply it? I think it's a daily thing. Sometimes I know, sometimes I don't know. You know, there are things you can do, pulling a tarot. I never read tarot professionally till I started working at a psychic bookstore and everybody wanted tarot. And then I got into it and I really liked it. I had done it for myself. So there's many different ways that you can step into the psychic realm or the intuitive realm. Edgar Casey said, if you be more spiritual, the psychic will come as an offshoot. Well, how do you be more spiritual? Your integrity. And during that time when I was on workers' comp, when all these doctors, all the people that should have been on the other side, they actually kind of backed me, for the most part, not all.
Right.
But I was very clear that I was not lying, that I was, and I took this class on, like a Bible class or studying Torah and Kabbalah, all that kind of stuff. And the doctors would look at me quizzically, like, how is that going to get you anywhere? But I had to have some basis for what was happening to me.
Mm-hmm.
And the basis, there's many ways to do that, through alchemy, through a lot of different processes. We can look at where we are in our journey, because we want, and at that point, what was I going to do? How was I going to work? And then a friend said to me, well, why don't you go to work for one of those psychic lines, because everybody comes to you for psychic information anyway. And I hadn't thought about it. And then I looked at the psychic line and I didn't think it was authentic and I didn't do it. But it seemed like I was at this place where choose one strength, either writing or psychic. And not being able to use my hands felt like, oh, come on, higher power, you're taking that too. And now I do writing. I mean, no, my hands, I never had the surgery. My wrists are better. I don't know what would have happened with the surgery, but there are things I can do. There's still things I can't do.
Yeah, and it really is amazing. You, for some reason, you needed to continue to be sidelined to guide you to where you are now. So when you...
I don't know if I need... Well, I guess at that point I did, because I felt if I continued working regular jobs, I just thought it was going to kill me. I couldn't keep going the way I was going, and I felt that I had 5 years left. And then I wasn't that I was going to kill myself. I just thought, I'll get in an accident, something will happen, and that's just it. That's all I have left. Not knowing that I was already, like, when you get carpal tunnel, like, your arms fall asleep, and there's all these, like, sensations, but it happened slowly, so I didn't, you know, I wasn't thinking on those lines. My head was elsewhere until it really hit me rather hard. And things don't usually come in that hard for me, because I usually feel that, you know, I have a low threshold for discomfort and things like that, which many of your callers or audience may relate to as being, you know, sensitive, that we feel things. And if you're like I was, or sometimes still am, people tell you, that's not happening. You don't see what you see. You don't feel what you feel. And then you find out, yes, you did, and yes, you do. And the world actually, more than ever now, I know I'm talking a lot, but the world more than ever now needs that feminine psyche that cares about the land, that cares about the right, you know, the intuitive, the right brain is what I was going to say, the more intuitive, poetic side of life.
That's wonderful. And you talk all you want. This show is about you. So anything you want to talk about, this is...
Finally!
I'm sure our audience is very interested. And so you mentioned channeling, that mm-hmm. the book you've written is is channeled and that a lot of the work you do is channeled. So explain how that process works for you.
Well, for me, I know Dr. Henry Reed wrote on my book, he's from the Edgar Cayce Foundation, he wrote, you know, we have to come up with a new name because he thinks it's better than what fortunately for me, he thinks it's better from what most of us think of as channeling, which means I'm not going to talk in an English accent or loud or any of that sort of theatrics. But what I find is that it's kind of like opening to the higher power, God, universe, whatever it is, you know, whatever you want to call it, and asking that the words speak through me, that something be given, and then I be able to record it. Anybody who's written or done art has feelings of like, you know, you read a story you've written and it's like, God, I don't even remember writing that. Who wrote that? And sometimes it's as simple as I have one client and it's up on my site because she asked me to share it with other people. Her father comes in periodically to readings and he'll tell me a bunch of stuff. And, you know, he'll give her really good advice. And usually it's good advice for me, too. And it'll be through symbols and things that she knows that are from her life. And so it's kind of opening to spirit, opening to something higher and letting it come through. And it can come through for your callers or your audience in the ways that their skills are set for. I know I've heard that some people can channel something they could never do. They can speak in tongues or whatever. But I think for most of us, you know, like I have a background in writing. I poetry means a lot to me. So if I'm going to put out affirmations, it can't just be words that don't sound beautiful, words that don't have vibration. I want something bigger. You know, am I successful at it? I hope so. Am I as successful as I want to be or will be? Or, you know, that's all something that for critics to look at. But the desire is there to be a vessel that I do that with readings, too. I pray for the person before I get on the phone to read for them. I ask God to speak through me and their angels and their guides. And to give me the highest information, because, you know, also as doing psychic readings, we get stuff that you don't want to say to people or they're not going to want to hear, and which is sometimes, no, this relationship isn't the one, or it's not, you know, this guy is, you know, or this woman or whatever. And, you know, just to be able to give information that is not necessarily what I'd like to be saying for the person. So in the way that I work in doing a reading is to look at the soul and say, well, what is the soul here for? So I use a little numerology about life destiny number, and I use the sound of people's voices and the vibration in their voice and looking at what they want and are they getting it? And if they're not getting it, what's in the way?
Mm-hmm. Interesting. So interesting. And I love that you mentioned that you pray prior to doing this, because I think there's a misunderstanding out there that being psychic is somehow in conflict with being religious. Have you encountered people who have that belief?
Yeah, I've had religious people when I worked at a psychic bookstore. I had one client. I have that thing where I don't recognize faces. It's called face blind is the easy prognostic. I don't know, but it's face blind. So I don't always, I recognize people by the sound of their voices or their clothes or stance. And I actually ran into her in a restaurant. It was a client of mine and she was very religious and she was so afraid that anybody outside her, you know, anyone in her religion would know that she was seeing a psychic. I've never understood that really. I mean, I know there's Bible verses that are scary, but there's also Bible verses and prophets and things that are for it. And, you know, people who study Kabbalah, I know that's gotten fashionable since Madonna, and there's all sorts of levels of looking at that. But you're dealing with really powerful energy when you go to God's source, you know, the source of who we are. It's our soul. So, yes, I've had people say that. One time this guy asked me out and then he found out what I did. This was years ago. And he said he wouldn't have anything to do with a person like me. Meanwhile,
wow.
I'm still the same person I was before he found out what I did. But a person like me, and I remember saying, you know, Carl Jung, the famous Carl Jung psychoanalyst, was, you know, he was psychic himself, and his family was psychic, and he believed, you know, he believed in the symbolic, and you can look at it as the symbolic level. There's so many levels at which you can look at it. So generally, people in my field, the modern psychics are often quite educated.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, which doesn't mean you have to be educated. You can just have, you know, oh, I see such and such coming. But I think it's also helping somebody see it coming. Oh, I see a train coming in your near future. You know, I see this bad relationship coming, and these kinds of people that you're, you know, that you're bringing into your life, or that are attracted to you, or you're attracted. Let's kind of go to the core and see how we can shift that if the person doesn't want to keep having that same pain.
Sure, sure.
So that's
wow.
different
and
from
so,
just
so how does somebody get the training? I mean, if they're highly educated, probably both in ways of the humanities and also in learning how to do psychic readings and how to hone that talent. So how did you perfect the mm-hmm. art of it, and how do others learn how to do this?
I think it's a daily process. I mean, maybe some people just do it. And, you know, I've taken training, truthfully, and I've worked with people that, I worked with a lot of people that studied at Clearsight and Berkeley Psychic Institute, and they really do have a specific way of training you with grounding cords and et cetera. And I use some of their techniques because people like me that grew up just taking care of themselves, using their own intuition, I've always called it intuition, but mm-hmm. using their own intuition, we didn't necessarily have ways to take care of ourselves. The biggest flaw, and maybe my biggest gift, but my biggest pain in my life was being highly sensitive. So I would feel things that weren't mine to feel. You know, I could walk in a room and start feeling other people's stuff, and everybody would be smiling, and I would say, I must be crazy. And then I would find out later that I wasn't crazy. There were things that were going on under the surface. So when I first got a job doing psychic readings, I went to a psychic bookstore and I thought, I'm either going to ask for a job. I'd been doing healings on people, and I'd been doing that for a long time. And I was doing a dream group, but I wasn't doing much of it for money. I worked at it for a long time. And I went into the psychic bookstore and I looked at who was working there, and I thought, I think I'm better than she is. And I'm going to ask for a job. And I asked for a job, and they hired me almost immediately. And things started to open up for me in a way they had not opened up for me in my life before. And I started to feel it was nice to start getting respect for something that most of my life I had been told to shut up about. And I started to get a following, and I did lectures there, and I taught classes. It was all things I had always wanted to do. I had wanted to teach for as long as I could remember, but I didn't want to go to the regular school system when I became, you know, college age. I didn't want to, you know, it just wasn't for me. But teaching about dreams and tarot and prosperity and, you know, psychic stuff, that was more for me. And that was my realm. I had also always wanted to have a salon, you know, like people had literary salons. Well, I wanted a psychic salon, and I did that. So I've done a lot of what I wanted to do in that realm. But it really came from, I was looking for something else that night and saw this bookstore, and it had some resonance to me and I just went in and just thought, I'll open my mouth and see what comes out. And what came out was asking for a job.
That's great. And so how did the Edgar Cayce Institute come about? How did you get connected with them for them to name you one of the world's top psychics?
Well, I think anybody, I think they still test. They do something called field testing. You do readings for a couple of different people that are the head of the thing. And they grade you. But when I first was going to do it, and Henry Reed sent me, I think he sent me a writing sample or something. I mean, it was something, and I looked at it, and I thought, I'm not doing that because I don't like to fail at things. So I never like to compete. And then the envelope was sitting across from me. I was supposed to do a reading on the envelope, I think 20 minutes before I opened it, and then open it and see the question and then read about the question and then put it all together. How did what I read before I knew what the question was, just the vibration? And so, you know, it's based on your own integrity, obviously. So I was looking at the envelope and I thought, well, you know what? Just for my own thing, I thought they'll never pick me, but just to be of service, I'm getting some vibe and I will just assume, I'm not going to set myself up. I'm just going to assume that, you know, don't even think about it again. And then they did, and they gave me a really high score, and they match it up with somebody else. And I got a really high score. And so they try you out in different ways of reading. I knew about Edgar Cayce. I'd known about Edgar Cayce since I was quite young, but had not been able to get into his books. And then I was working for somebody in the entertainment industry as a personal assistant, and I hated the job. I was so miserable there. But one of the kids' drama teachers came in and started talking about Edgar Cayce and was showing us stuff. And I left that job right after that, but I started reading Edgar Cayce and about Edgar Cayce. And again, I was like, it was another painful, this was pre having the carpal tunnel, you know, it was another, where am I going in my life? And I read about the Association for Research and Enlightenment and just, it gave me a place to stand and a place to be for people like me that didn't seem to fit anywhere. My biggest question was, where is my place in this world? It seems odd now because I have a little niche, you know, maybe a very little niche, but I have my little niche. But it just was like there, it just felt like there for so much of my life, like there was no place for someone like me.
Right. And there it was. And there are so many different kinds of intuition, of being psychic, different senses. Could you tell our listeners a little bit about the differences between the different types of messages that you get?
Are you asking clairaudient as opposed to clairvoyant, or I'm not quite sure what you're asking?
Yes, clairaudient, clairvoyant, clairsentient.
Okay, sure.
Yeah.
I tend to be more clairaudient, which means I start to hear something in my head. And I will say to a person when I'm talking to them, I do most of my readings by phone unless people want to come in. I don't need them to come in for me. But I just start to hear things in the vibration of their voices. Or like I'll have people say very often, probably the most frequent reading I do is a woman interested in a man and wondering, is he going to call her? Why didn't he call? What's he thinking? And so I'll have the woman say her name, his name, and I'll, if he's at all open, and I can tell that because I can start hearing what he's thinking in his head. And we can check that out later because very often they'll come back and they'll say, God, when he finally spoke, he told me exactly what you said, you know? Or I'll say, when I'm getting a message, I'll say, does this resonate? Does it seem, you know, am I getting you? Am I getting... and sometimes for all of us, we forget. I can remember when I worked at the psychic bookshop and I had a woman in my room and she kept saying, this happened more than once where sometimes people bring a friend and she would, no, that's not me. That's not me. And her friend would be like nodding her head behind her going, yeah, that's her. Because we always, we have blind spots. So one of the things I look at is, where is this person's blind spot? Because that's what gives us more more power in our lives. Because everybody, you know, the blind spot is that part. Everybody else knows it about you or me, but we don't, you know. And so the clairaudient, clairvoyant is seeing where you just get an image. Clairsentient, the feeling. Sometimes I can smell things. I lived with a roommate some years ago, and I would smell certain smells that turned out that was her mother's perfume. Or at one point, there was coffee that was spilled. She remembers it better than I do. Something about coffee. Remember, coffee just started appearing on the floor, spilled on the floor, like out of nowhere. So I forget what that's called when things, I've had a lot of like things that just happen. And you asked me to just tell you about among the different kinds of things. So there's sense, there's smell, there's hearing, there's sight, there's just an inner knowing. And I think your audience might really relate to the inner knowing thing. I had a lot of that, especially where it's like, you don't know how you know, you just know. Uh-huh. And I know for me, sometimes, especially when I was starting out as a reader, somebody, you know, I do ask people, does this resonate for you? But sometimes I could say, you know, this is what I'm getting and I know bones. So if the other person doesn't know it, you know, then I would send them to another reader if they didn't, you know, if, but mostly when I, you could just get this, like, you just know in your bones what you're hearing is right. And so right. You can look at it different ways. Oh, let's pull the tarot card and see if that, you know, sometimes you just know.
Sure, sure. And so, I mean, you talked earlier about people's blind spot. I guess some people have a seeing spot, a sense that's stronger than others with their own intuition. Mm-hmm. So how can people dive more deeply into that and learn to increase their own intuitive abilities?
Meditation is the first thing that every single person will tell you. There was a woman, and you can read about her on my site. Her name was Beverly Jaggers, and she didn't believe in the spiritual stuff, and she was all about, you know, you can study remote viewing, and there are some people I think are much better at teaching that. I study with Lori Williams, but I always get back to all of the stuff where they teach you to do methods. To me, it always gets back to I already knew that in myself. But the people that kind of don't like the method, that don't like the, you don't know how you know, you just know, there's a lot of methodology you can do. One of the things you can do, you want to know about somebody, I do this and I learned this in remote viewing, is you write the person's name out and you tap your pen or pencil on their name. You just tap it on their name and you see what you get. A lot of people like, they use... like little symbols. You can make up little symbols in remote viewing. They have symbols that show man-made, symbols that show water, land, and you, so that you can just let your hand go and draw symbols before your conscious mind knows what you're doing. You know, Edgar Casey had Bible verses for people to read. He was a Christian mystic. He believed in meditation. There's so many different ways that you can come to it. Just stopping and listening, slow down. I don't even like doing readings for people when they book me in, like, okay, I'm going to go to the acupuncturist, then I'm going to go for the car wash, then I'm going to do this, then I'm going to have a massage, then I'm going to book you for, you know, 45 minutes or an hour or half an hour or whatever. You know, that fast, it's kind of like the psychic usually works slowly. I mean, you may
and
get
I would imagine so. You've got to get into the groove and slow down and be open to whatever comes. Now, I'm certain there is not a typical psychic reading, because obviously all of them are different. But if you could just describe for the audience what the process for one of the readings that you do, just from the beginning.
Well, for me? Yeah, yes. My process is generally I meditate about the person for about 10 minutes ahead of time. I don't have to. I just do, because I'm a Capricorn, and Capricorns think everything has to be useful. So if you spend money with me, I want to give you your full value. So a process with me is I always tell people, take the first 5 minutes of the reading, make sure you like my style. If not, then we'll avoid the charge and stop. And the reason I do that is because I'm totally committed. So I can't stop myself. And I may be saying things that, you know, I'm going to tell you the truth as it comes through me. So the way I do it is, so before I pick up the phone, I'll do that thing of tapping on the person's name, and I just start writing about them. I started doing that after I studied remote viewing. Just, you know, sometimes I'll write, you know, what's good for them, whether it's water or they need more land or they need, you know, just whatever comes up. I do a little numerology ahead of time. And just see if that resonates. I kind of, because patterns start to form. And then I still stay open because, you know, there's a higher power and it's not me. And if they're in person, I'll put my hands, when the person comes, I'll put my hands above the person's hand and just feel the energy. And I'll have them say their full birth name. Now, sometimes people have issues, they've changed their names or whatever, so we'll use whatever names come through. And I just tell them stuff about themselves and about what's coming up, or, you know, I never know. That's why I tell you, take the first 5 minutes, because I don't even want to know what's going to come through, because the nature of creativity is that it has to have surprise elements to it. And sometimes people think, oh, well, don't you have to see me to do a reading? Well, why would I have to see you? Because I don't want to do it predicated on your clothing or on your, you know, I just want to hear the vibration. I don't want to, like, not that it isn't good to make, as a psychic and you're paying me, I want to do it the way I do it. But if you're working on your own, Edgar Cayce said this, and I believe this to be true, you know, you use left and right brain. You write, you know, if you have a decision to make, write a list about the positive and the negative, as well as incubate a dream, ask for a dream that night to give you information. So you're using the right brain with the dream work and the left brain with, you know, the good and the bad kind of thing. So for me in a reading, it's usually on the phone. I will ask people to ask me questions, but I usually start out talking. It depends. If they book 15 minutes, that goes very fast. So I'll get to the questions quickly. Sometimes I answer all the questions before they were asked. But I just see what comes through. And it's kind of like that. It's kind of like, you know, you just open up and speak. And my concerns in terms of my business, I want people to, when they leave, I'd like them to have full value for their money and feel like they got it. I have no control over that. But the reason I ask for questions is because my mind can go all over the place. And, you know, I want to make sure, like, you can get a lot of good information that way, but it still might not tell you, is Mr. Wright going to call on Thursday at 6 o'clock? And people I've noticed that people love, when I worked at the psychic bookshop, I could say, I've done stuff where it's like, I'm astounded at the information that's just come through. It's not my information. And then, again, because we live in this human dimension, yeah, but you didn't tell me, you know, it's like, okay, yeah, here's what he's thinking about calling, and he's looking at the phone, you know, we can look at some of that. But I can remember, like, saying to this one woman, you're going to see him, he's going to be wearing a white shirt on Thursday. And the fact that he showed up at her work in a white shirt on that Thursday was more meaningful to her than anything. And to me, because because I'm face blind and I don't pay that much attention to clothes and stuff, it, like, the white shirt seemed like the least of it. But I guess if you're standing on the other side and you're a customer and it's like, oh yeah, she got it, you know, she even got that part.
Right. Now, so are you also a medium? Do spirits come through to you?
I do that. I do not bill myself as a medium, but when people ask me to look, I do send people to Tim Braun for mediumship, or I have friends, or if they want simply a medium, you know, like a reading, like they just want to talk to the dead. Yes, I do get spirits coming through. I'll often ask, sometimes I'll just ask, I'm seeing this, you know, female presence, blah, 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 blah. But I assume with a medium that they're going to get very, very specific. And sometimes it may come through to me like that, but I could never bill myself as that. And I feel like when you go to a medium, you know, I've been to famous mediums and they haven't necessarily gotten it, you know? But that's mediums, you know, they say that all mediums are psychics, but all mediums aren't good at giving you psychic information, but they should be good at giving you really good information about the dead. So I will often say, you know, say the name of the person, just say it a couple, because I get a lot out of the vibration of names. And then I'll say, well, this is what I'm getting about them, or this is what they're thinking, or, you know, so I do that in my readings for people, but I don't work strictly as a medium.
Okay, excellent. And so what do people ask you when people give you questions for the reading? Are there any themes aside from obviously romance that you've mentioned, are there any other themes that,
money,
that run about?
Yeah, money. Am I going to sell this house? I do something energetically because sometimes houses aren't selling. So, you know, why isn't it selling? And then sometimes I put energy into opening it up. So I've done that with a few people, knock on wood, it's been good. And, sometimes they want someone to think of them, and I won't do the, like, forcing someone to think of you, but we can send a mental message that reminds that person that you exist. And then it's up to them whether they think of you or not. You know, I can send some direct messages, but they have autonomy to decide what they're going to do with it. But we want to, you know, keep people, see, is my house going to sell? Somebody else whose son, her son just had to have brain surgery. And the first thing I got was I kept seeing him hitting his head against a wall. And the surgery he was having was not for that. But then she told me he had had surgery. He had had experience, you know, where he had hit his head like that. And, you know, I was able to tell her what he was thinking because he's all over the place now. He's got a lot. He's got multi-addictions and a lot of issues going on. And her question, well, I don't want to get too specific into. So, you know, I've done a lot for people that I'm not a medical, you know, like I'm not going to prescribe. But I can tell her what, I do a lot of telepathy. What's he thinking? And so she was telling me what she was saying to him that was not working. And I could say, well, that's not going to work with the way this person thinks. We always think people think like us.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can kind of get in telepathically to somebody's head, they don't see things the same way you do. And so so I get questions about, you know, is this person going to leave? Are they going to stay? Are they going to allow me to do such and such? Am I going to meet somebody? Where's the best place? With men, it's often about finances and business, or a lot of times men will want to have this one, how can I get this woman? She's the one for me. And with one person, I told him, you know, the way she thinks, and if you want this woman, if I didn't think she was the right woman for him, and she kept breaking up with him, but I said, you know what? And she wouldn't even speak to him at that point. I said, if you want her, this is what you have to do. This is who she wants. But here's the thing. Once I'm not telling you what to do for who she wants, how are you going to keep this going?
Yeah.
Oh, no, he was sure he could. And he got her back. And he's like, this is going so great. And, of course, he didn't want to read with me anymore. And then she left him again because his normal self was never going to be the kind of guy she wanted. You know? And
right.
Unless he was being dictated. And, you know, I don't know. So so a lot of times with men also, they'll have fallen in love with a stripper.
Really?
Don't know me, that just find me from the internet, will have fallen in love with a stripper, and they will believe that, and I don't mean to say this, but they will feel that they are the guy for her. And why doesn't she realize that they're giving her money, they're doing this stuff for her, and why is she going to the bad guy instead of them? So again, looking at, so it's a lot of times, so for men, it's often about business, business ventures, and for women, it's about business as well. But I get a lot of people that, am I living my true purpose? What's my purpose? What's my path in life? Am I going to have children? I don't really like to answer that question, but I've been good at, knock on wood, that's come through, you know, where I've been able to say to people, I see a son. And, you know, I mean, I have that on my list of testimonials. But it's hard. Why don't I like it? Because sometimes it doesn't look like that's going to happen for somebody. And I don't want to be the one to tell them that. And nothing is written in stone. And I have a healer friend. I do healings, but I don't advertise that. So I send healing when I'm doing readings. I work through healing as well. But I will send them, say, to my friend who does healing, who's very good with helping people with fertility. And say it's a coincidence, but, you know, she's got a lot of those good coincidences.
Oh, that's great. That's great.
So those are some of the questions that I can think of right off the top of my head.
Excellent. Now, how do you turn it off? I mean, if you're walking in the grocery store and you're passing people in the aisle and you're both pushing your carts, are you getting messages for them? How do you live in your own?
I used to, and it was driving me crazy. That's the highly sensitive person. And I was in this study, again, at the Edgar Cayce Institute called Battered Boundaries. For people, they were only picking up on negative things, and they didn't know why, like the Challenger explosion, and they knew beforehand. And I was picking up, I'd sit next to somebody who was happy, I was happy. They were sad, I was sad. It was like they had a craving for chocolate, I suddenly had a craving for chocolate. And I would know, because I remember somebody said to me, she said, I can't stop eating chocolate. And I thought, oh, that's why I suddenly am tasting chocolate. So a lot of mine was about blocking, was about learning ways to block. And, you know, I teach some of that. Sometimes I teach to clients when we're on the phone, send them to places, you know, where you can learn that. I was told in the Battered Boundaries group, the psychics that read for me said, when I start, and all of us ended up doing readings, we ended up becoming like personal psychics to people that were supposed to be studying us. And but the psychics that did do readings for us, what they said to me is, when you start working as a psychic, you'll be able to shut it off more. And I'm an introverted person. I don't go out a lot. I find it difficult. I wish that weren't true about me. And yet there are times when I can just easily go out. But a lot of times I hate committing to things because it's like, it's so hard for me to get in the car and show up in the world. And like I said, it's not a thing I like about myself, but I can't deny it about myself either.
Absolutely. And I would imagine that kind of energy is exhausting. So for people who are looking for a psychic reading, for people who have those questions that they want answered, what steps should they take? What should they look for in a psychic? How should they go about selecting the right person to talk to?
I just wrote an article about it, and I have not typed it up yet, and of course I don't remember what I said. That's part of the joy of being me, what was in it. But I am going to put it up on my website, and it'll be on my blog, or I have a free psychic newsletter. I'm not trying to sell stuff. This is all free. And I think ethics are important. Carolyn Mace talks about she thinks that we all have intuition, and that the issue people lack is integrity, that you have to, and self-esteem. She really stresses self-esteem. Build that and you'll be able to believe your own inner voice and say it with strength. Now, she comes off very harshly a lot of times for people. So when you're looking for a psychic, one, I've had people come to me that are very educated people and smart people, whether they're educated, self-educated, or whatever, that have paid readers like $1,500 and put it in a drop box to get some curse taken off of them. Don't do that. I mean, maybe I shouldn't be saying that, but I don't feel... I do a lot of hocus pocus stuff, but I can't even, I don't charge for that separately because I don't want to be mixed up with any of that kind of thing where somebody can give you a good reading and then they catch you and they say, put this $1,500 in and I'm going to dream dreams for you. And, you know, and yes, I can do that stuff, but you're getting into start to question that kind of thing. If anybody's asking you for big sums of money, sometimes you call me and yell at me because somebody took big sums of money from them. And I'll be like, well, I don't do that. I tell you what I charge, pour the time I charge it. And, you know, and that's how it'll be and what'll be on your credit card and how it'll show up. And, you know, it's not, that's the non woo woo part, but you mm-hmm. should have some parameters to know. You know, a therapist once said, a union therapist said to me, why do you give people that 5 minutes? What are they going to tell in 5 minutes? And it's like, well, what am I going to do? Give them a whole half an hour? And then at the end you go, you know, but I feel like, well, let me give you something and then you can decide. But she thought, her feeling was like, really? People can't invest of their, why do they have to have any money back at all? Why don't they just invest a half an hour and find out if they like you or if they like your, you know, why not just spend that money? And maybe it's the Capricorn in me, and Capricorns always think not enough money and not enough time and full value and everything being useful. But yeah, it would be nice if we could all just go to people and go, you know, that person, it wasn't, you know, so it wasn't so great. And I did a half an hour, but it's also, I like her thinking on that, because sometimes you can, especially I don't always record it. I give people the opportunity if they want it recorded, but you can listen later and hear things you didn't hear. And things you weren't open to then. I notice, and I'm answering questions you didn't ask, but I notice that when I listen, when I used to get readings, and I'd be asking about a specific relationship or a specific thing that was important to me at the time, but it's not important to me anymore. It's been resolved. And mostly the answers they gave just don't mean anything. But the bigger spiritual context of my life, that still has meaning. So when people can, even bad psychics, I want a thing for a psychic story I wrote about my own life, and all these different psychics, and they were like the phone psychics, and there are some good phone psychics, but these weren't those. And you know, a lot of people just open a book and they look in a book and they point to something. That's how they're doing it. But when they looked in the spiritual books and they could at least say something spiritual, it still gave me something lasting. Then one said to me, I was going to meet somebody tall, dark, and handsome in a bar. And I don't go to bars. And tall, mm-hmm. dark, and handsome, you know, and again, if you're hearing cliches, I mean, sometimes it comes out a little cliche-ish, but, you know.
Right. You can kind of tell if something is so general that it could apply to anyone or anything. Yes. It's amazing to think about the business side of spirituality and energy work and intuitive work. That's got to be something that every aspect of that field, all practitioners must struggle with that, because it's, I mean, how do you put a price on it? How do you put a value on it? How do you not get taken?
Have you
ever had a skeptic come in who just walked out with his or her mind blown?
Have I ever had who come in that's walked out with their mind blown?
A skeptic?
Oh, yeah. I had one person one time, and I don't like reading for people when they're drinking. It's one of the reasons I don't like doing parties. Also, because I don't do light little readings. I really like to look deeply at things. This woman, you're not going to be able to read for me. I know nobody can read for me. And I was like, and I was able to just like go right in. And first of all, I was able to say, you know, you're drinking. And you got a problem with alcohol. But I was also able to tell her a lot of stuff, and her face just completely changed. So, yeah, I'm naturally skeptical. I did, I worked at a bridal shower party, I think it was a bridal shower thing, and I was so tired at the end. I mean, so tired. And at the end, somebody said to me, "We love you. We were all testing you." Because, you know, at a party, you get one person after another and they get 5 minutes, or inevitably somebody who probably wasn't invited to the party will take 15 minutes. But for the most part, it's just one person after another. And they're like, yeah, we were all testing you. And then we compared notes. You know, that's tiring.
So I would imagine yes.
My feeling is if somebody does book with me, is like to say, trust me, if I give you good information, who cares how it comes through? If it's good information, then it's useful and you can use it. And if it's not, well, then, hopefully it will be. Hopefully I'm not working in that arena.
Right. Hopefully at some point it will become relevant. Well, Lori Kazan, we've run out of time, but I can't thank you enough for being on the show.
Well, thank you. And it's Lori Kazan, just you know.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. That's okay. Now I'm going to have me correcting you, former, you know, somebody who wanted to be an English teacher. Thank you so much, Shannon, for everything that you do and all the things that you stand for. And I know you've been through a lot and have come through a lot and really stand for women in a big way, stand for humanity.
Thank you. Thank you. And for anyone who wants to buy her book, it is Channeled 1 Minute Meditations to Rewire Your Brain.
It's called Happiness Calls Your Name. That's the first title. Yeah, and you can get it on Barnes & Noble. See, here's the business side of me, Capricorn. Barnes & Noble or Amazon. Those are the two easiest places to get it.
Okay, wonderful.
Or under my name.
so much, and thanks to all the listeners out there and for the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network and the show The Authentic Woman. This is Shannon Fisher, and I'll see you next time.
Saving money for your business should be simple. And with Lowe's Business Credit, you can save your business 5% on everyday purchases. It's that easy, that instant. Save 5% in-store or at lowesforpros.com on the supplies, tools, and materials your business needs. There are no hoops to jump through, no extra steps to take, and nobody telling you where to spend the money you save. Visit the Pro Desk for details or go to lowesforpros.com and save instantly with Lowe's Business Credit. Offer subject to credit approval and cannot be combined with other credit offers. Exclusions apply.